Today's program was brought to you by VisitNapaValley.com, the official page for travel to the Napa Valley, America's legendary wine, food, arts, and wellness capital. For more information, visit www.visitnapavalley.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
It's incredibly handsome, the teeth so white. Smile to the camera and speak for your rights. While I empty the fridge and crank out the snakes and pop up the lid, and then here's what I would have done, would have never done wrong. And until he's still on trial, you said it, you did it, you came up with it, you ran to this song, believing all the facts. I would be, I could be miraculous.
Save the planet.
Yeah, it's a pretty good to-do list.
That was just Oland, who will be performing live in studio, who brought the Little Bits Korg synth, which is so cool.
So cool.
I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. I'm your other host, Greg Bresnitz. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Oh, do you want to do it in unison?
One, two, no.
Come on. Welcome.
Wait, no.
Okay. We'll practice it.
Yeah.
It's freezing outside. I know that literally everyone is talking about it, but it's so cold.
Brain hurts a little bit. Anyway.
Good to be in the studio with you, Broham.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Yeah.
We are very excited to have Jesse Kahn and Tommy Gallagher from Counterculture Coffee. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks, so, guys.
My first question for you guys, since 20-year anniversary, current 2015, everyone is like in New York is dialed in to pour-over coffee, you know, the Japanese drip coffee, you know, whatever. We are so well-trained. What is the coffee scene 20 years ago in New York like when you guys were starting out?
God, you know, counterculture didn't work in New York 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, we're a Durham, North Carolina-based company.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, you know, 20 years ago in Durham, North Carolina, and in most cities, the coffee scene probably didn't look demonstrably different than the way that it looks today.
Yeah, because what? That was 1995?
Yeah.
I mean, coffee, I mean, if we all remember a little movie called So I Married Axe Murderer, the opening scene.
Yeah.
With Hello, I believe I ordered the large cappuccino.
Yeah, exactly.
Coffee culture was in effect. But what made you guys, so let's say the coffee, you know, culture is in effect. What made you want to dip your toe into the giant pool of coffee, if you will?
Individually, or?
We can go individually and then together.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Kind of like you guys with the intro.
Yeah.
Beastie Boys style.
Beastie Boys.
I got into coffee by accident. I just got a part-time job in coffee to meet people because I had moved to a town where I didn't really know anybody.
What was the name of the place? Shout it out.
It was called Murky Coffee. It doesn't exist anymore. It was in...
Not a great pun.
Washington, D.C.
Not a great pun. It's okay. Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I think Power Drip or something like that. We'll work it. We'll work on it. We'll work on that later. So you're in D.C.
Uh-huh.
Murky Coffee.
Yeah.
Barista?
Yeah.
How was your foam game?
My foam game?
Foam.
Oh, foam game. My foam game was actually super tight.
My phone game was awesome. I had all the apps.
Yeah.
It was great.
I was definitely texting people with the number pad.
Yeah, playing Snake.
I was on the T9 too.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
T9.
Yeah, no, my phone game was super tight. It just so happened to work at a coffee shop where the owner had won a barista competition, and a couple other people who were working there had won barista competitions, and it was weird because I just got it as like a part-time job. But when everybody in the room is like noticeably really good at a thing, you start feeling like an asshole for not being super good at a thing. So then you just want to be better at other people at it. So it was just like kind of awesome. Like,
what was your favorite design?
You know, sort of classic Rosetta-ish type stuff. Yeah.
So when did it flip from part-time job to career calling?
That place, Murky Coffee, was a place that used counterculture coffee.
Okay.
And working there, I became friends with people who worked at counterculture or would go on to work at counterculture. And yeah, I don't know, just knowing them and hearing about jobs that were opening up and... My current job sounded like an interesting thing, so...
Can we just take a quick pause on the history? For those who don't know what counterculture coffee is, can you just give the byline on what it's all about?
Cool. Counterculture Coffee is a specialty coffee roaster based out of North Carolina. And they are sort of unique in their sort of category from the perspective that they just do wholesale stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't have any cafes or restaurants, so it's exclusively, you know, providing people who sell coffee with their coffee. And they have always been kind of regional. We're becoming increasingly national. But every major market we sell coffee in, we build, instead of a store or a cafe, a training center that's just a place for businesses that use our coffee to come and learn as much about coffee as they want to.
Awesome.
So the idea there being like, we have this, we invest money in a facility that doesn't directly make revenue, but like, in theory, by supporting people who buy coffee from us and making them better at it, we're helping them improve their revenue, which will you know, make revenue for us. So it's a very indirect.
Full circle.
Yeah.
Revolutions.
It's like a really cool, weird investment thing to do. So
yeah. How'd you get into coffee?
I got into coffee, you know, like a lot of people. I was in college and I worked at a super, super dubious coffee shop in my college town.
Name and why was it dubious?
It was called the Black Sheep Deli.
Okay.
Yeah. Do I need to say more? It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can
we
you
made
give,
sandwiches.
Like,
there were salads.
Can you give like there one were, story of what made it dubious?
We had, we brewed like 10 different varieties of coffee every single day.
Wow.
And they were lined up like a sea of coffee urns, this idea being that you would like select your blend, but it basically became like the soda fountain in like a summer camp cafeteria where you just want to like put a little bit of everything into one cup.
Yeah. Which is how coffee was designed to be enjoyed.
Yeah, it's exactly how, because it's basically all the same. So why
so
not just, yeah.
I want medium roast. So I'll take a little bit of the light roast.
Yeah, I'm going to take
a little bit of the dark
roast.
This
Ring of Fire blend looks awesome. I totally want to get into that.
But
so yeah, I did that, and then I moved to Seattle, and I worked for Starbucks for a really long time.
Sorry, yeah. I don't know that one.
They're like a super small local Seattle.
Oh, cool.
Spot. Yeah.
So if I go to Seattle, look for them.
You should go to Seattle. Okay, cool. Look for them. They're in the,
Greg. Write that down. Yeah.
They're in the,
yeah, I got it.
They're in that market. So yeah, I did that, and then I came to New York, and I did some consulting, like helping people build coffee shops. And
can you name any of them that you built?
I moved to New York to work for a company called OTG, which is a company that works in they work in airports, but specifically I was at LaGuardia and JFK, and they're like a company that works with chefs like Andrew Carmelini and Riad and Lee from Balthazar and Minetta, and they pay chefs to build restaurant concepts that they can put into restaurants.
Gotcha.
So if you're ever in
in airports?
Yeah, in airports. Okay. Yeah, sorry. So yeah, yeah, if you're flying out of like JFK and you see like, I don't know, if you're in like Terminal 4 and you see
Terminal 4, like bow Marcus down.
Yeah, exactly.
Bow down to that Shake Shack. You know what the power move is?
Man. Shake Shack?
Shake Shack breakfast sandwich, 2LA, In-N-Out, double-double animal style.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Wow. Straight to the cardiologist for heart disease.
Yeah.
I've done
that many times in the last several months.
It's
that exact move.
It's a move.
So I'm with you. Yeah, it's a power move. They definitely put the Shake Shack at the gate where you fly to LA.
I mean, when the line is long, you're
in the Shake Shack.
Yeah,
well, now they have two.
There's another one. People were too lazy to walk down. You couldn't walk.
They
just get on a cart. They have the little.
But it's
little
but it's like so you'll fly across the country, but you can't walk like 10. No. No, I won't.
You're not physically doing the flying. You're just sitting there for 5 hours.
Fine. Yeah. So you're helping open.
They hired me to like help them build a coffee shop that they could have. And part of that deal was I had to figure out who the coffee roasters were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Counterculture was a company that I respected a ton because they buy great coffee and the support is amazing. And so when that kind of consulting gig ended, Counterculture had a job opening. And they talked to me about it, and it seemed awesome, and it has been awesome. So that all worked out really well.
That's great.
Yeah.
And what was it like? When did you guys meet? What year?
Was it 2010?
Yeah.
Did
you guys go out for coffee?
Yeah.
We've been out for many coffees since.
Had a lot of coffees. We've shared coffees.
When you guys go out for coffee, what's that discussion like? I will say that my favorite...
It's super positive.
We're the
coffee.
Biggest pains in the ass.
I have my favorite cup of coffee in the city. I probably won't say it because I don't think it...
We'll talk about it off the air because I don't want to take away from offline.
Yeah. But I'm not really like a coffee snob. Like, I think... I look at it this way. It's really an awesome cup of coffee. And then everything else is like, meh. You know? Like, I'm fine with a diner cup of coffee.
Oh, that's a totally different thing. It's got a special place in my heart.
Okay.
It's got a time and a place.
It's like a Shake Shack or an In-N-Out burger. It's like, that is a different burger from the like super amazing otherworldly like restaurant burger. And like you like them both, but you like them for different reasons.
A McDonald's cheeseburger is kind of a platonically perfect thing in its own thing. It's not like comparable to like getting some other stuff, but it's kind of got
or
its
like
own kind of perfect.
A slice joint versus like
Roberta's.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good to know that you guys, I mean, that to me is the true definition of someone who really enjoys food and beverage is they can respect the, you know, Peter Luger's or like the Keens or like the Stone Barge and then be like, I will also get this street meat.
Okay. Yeah. But I think it's important to draw a differential there because the idea of quality as it relates to like sustainability and sourcing is really, really important. So like the whole street meat thing, like we can sit here and be like, oh yeah, street meat. Like I can totally dig some halal guys, but like, let's also recognize that that's probably, it would be really, really bad if all meat production in the world went towards the direction of like
of course.
A $4 giant styrofoam container of chicken.
No, of
and
course.
Like the diner cup of coffee is the coffee version of that.
Halal, yeah.
And so like what Counterculture, you know, and our peer group are really trying to do is educate and elevate that product so that people are willing to pay more for it. And doing that means they have to recognize that there's a quality differential there. So I feel like that's an important point.
Is the coffee industry that supports the diner cup of coffee as harmful to the environment or as bad as sort of like the halal meat supply chain?
You mean like it's I personally am not a person who is capable of quantifying that.
Okay.
Like I don't have the knowledge to quantify that, but I would say the answer is it is bad. Whether it's as bad as that, I don't know how to draw that. Like,
yeah,
what do you think?
It has the, I mean, yeah, it's got its own things.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that gets into how do you measure bad? What are you measuring bad
by? No, of course.
Sure.
But I mean, you know,
it's
fair,
bad.
Fair trade, wages.
Sure, right.
If you want to like, investing back into your growers, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you're paying $5 for a cup of coffee versus a buck.
Yeah,
I mean, there's obviously a difference.
Yeah, and understanding, you know, where you're, the supply chain of coffee. You know, coffee is a product that grows not around here. You know, it's got to get here. It does not grow around here.
I got a hydroponic coffee grow.
There's no local coffee
in my apartment in Bushwick. Don't tell the cops.
So yeah, it's got to travel, and then you got to brew it,
and
you got to roast it, and all of those things have an impact on the environment and cost money.
Yeah.
And so being transparent about, like, where the money goes into that supply chain is important.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's a super fickle plant. Like, it only grows between Tropic Cancer, Tropic Capricorn.
Yeah.
It doesn't like super hot stuff, but it also, like, it can't deal with frost. You know what I mean? So it's, like, it needs to grow high up on a mountain in a tropical place. Places that are generally, like, super, super pretty. But also, like, tend to be in, like, super developing parts of the world. So it's just, like, you know, you see coffee that's really expensive and you see coffee that's super cheap, but they all have the similar geographic sort of requirements.
Right.
Ecological requirements. So it's, like, how can somebody, like, be able to give you that dollar cup of coffee from, you know, in one of those Greek cups? Like, what are they doing to those people to make that coffee so cheap?
Right. Where are you getting these beans fell off the truck type of thing. Right,
totally.
So wait, before we go to break, can you name check? We didn't answer where you guys go for coffee.
Oh.
I am a huge fan of going to Little Collins.
Oh,
which is a shop in Midtown on Lexington Avenue that I love a lot. I also love our friends at Everyman Espresso, do a really phenomenal
shout
job.
Shout out. So good.
And I will also throw in a shout out for Maialino, which is like my favorite restaurant to drink coffee
That's
at.
That's probably a good restaurant to tuck into on a day like today.
Yeah, it's okay over there.
That place
is
very cozy.
Yeah. And for you?
I mean, I definitely am super fond of Everyman. There's a place called Gotan that I really like in Tribeca. And there's a place called Third Rail Coffee that is...
Third Rail's great.
It's great, yeah.
Really, really dipping into those thirds.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
That's the trend.
So true.
It used to be Wolf Coffee, Wolf Brew, things like that. Now it's this. All right.
We're in a post-Wolf society right now.
We're going to take a quick musical break, and then we'll be back with Jesse and Tommy. But this is shout-out to Ben Palmer for bringing us out this weekend. This is Void Ripper, Infinity Shred, who we saw at Palisades on Friday night here on Snacky Tunes. It's so good. This album, Infinity Shred,
Spotify.
Sanctuary, is really, you really got to like listen to the whole thing. Like, it's one long track. We are joined in-house, Jesse and Tommy, Counterculture Coffee.
I have a question.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
From this side of the room.
Jump on, jump on.
Yeah,
there.
Let me get back in there.
Yeah. Oh.
All right, everybody. Everybody. Yeah.
Okay.
Dig coffee. Deep.
No.
What is coffee?
What is coffee? Having there be like so many coffee roasters and makers in New York, some of the companies that you work with and restaurants are incredible, probably some of the best. How is it that you were able to kind of build those relationships, and like what kind of values did you align on building it with those? And if you could also name check some of them, that'd be great.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, for us, we really, really try and work with like-minded people, which, you know, I think is about finding people that have a really, really broad care for all of the products that they serve. So I think it's interesting, you know, coffee. So there's like this world of food and beverage, right? There's the restaurant world and there's the coffee shop world.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee shops get to be these kind of like unique, they're like the single issue voters of the food and beverage world. They're like all about coffee. They just serve coffee, and they buy pastries from mostly like pretty similar places.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, I'm going to go to my coffee shop, and I know that they're focused on the product because it's the only thing that they sell.
Right.
So like clearly they're focused on it. And I think I certainly have a lot of love for those shops because I love well-prepared coffee. And if your focus is not split to a bunch of different things, you're probably going to do a really good job with the one thing that you're focused on. So we think about like Third Rail, or Everyman, Little Collins, Gotan, like these places that really, really like go hard for coffee. That's awesome. But when we get to work with restaurants, we have, you know, there's this broad spectrum of food and other beverages that come into the mix. And we get to be a part of like a broader thing. And that's really cool for totally different reasons. So I think about like, you know, our relationship with Rob Newton, who is a chef in Brooklyn who owns with his girlfriend, Carrie Diamond. Yeah. They own.
Shout out.
Yeah, totally.
They've been past guests here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Those guys are high up on our list. Yeah.
Nightingale 9.
I would knife a guy for those two. Absolutely. yeah. Nightingale 9, Smith Canteen, Wilma Jean. R.I.P. Seersucker.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Yeah.
Did its thing.
It did its thing, and it was awesome. It has sort of been reincarnated in Wilma Jean, too, which is really cool. Anyway, so, like, when we talk to, like, Rob and Carrie about, like, what does counterculture mean to them, and, like, how does counterculture exist in a relationship with their kind of trio of food places, it's really interesting to hear, because, like, they are super focused on where they buy all of the different things that they serve. You know, and for them, I think counterculture fits this awesome part of their coffee program where we can provide them with education and we can talk to them about coffee in the same way that, like, them buying wines from the Finger Lakes means that they can, like, have a relationship with the people that they're buying wine from and, like, have a dialogue. And so I think that that's something that's really, really important to us. We try very, very hard. And I won't say that we succeed 100% of the time, but we do, I think, a really good job of avoiding just being a vendor of a product.
Right.
In the same way that, like, you know, you need paper cups. You can call 24 people for paper cups. You probably don't need to talk to that person for too long about the cups that you're buying. But, like, you should want to talk to us a lot about coffee. And we very much want to talk to the people that we work with about coffee.
Right.
And so that's the relationship we're looking for, is one where, you know, we're liking there. We don't want to be sitting at the table both on our phones. We want to be talking. We want to be hanging out.
You don't have to. Well, we've never asked you to name check, but has there ever been an instance where someone has gotten your coffee, you've gone in to try it, and they're just butchering it, and you just kind of go, we're just going to kind of call this relationship?
That's kind of the thing, too, about, like, being the vendor of a raw ingredient. You know what I mean? Like, like, companies in our peer group tend to also have presences of their own in a retail or cafe or restaurant sort of way. So they can kind of control, they have some control over the consumption experience by other people. Whereas what's kind of awesome about our situation is we exclusively rely on other people's businesses. And so that becomes a lot about, like, putting an emphasis on making people better at tasting things and cultivating the things that they like. So, like, you're going to make a product that you like out of our stuff, you know what I mean? And sort of trusting that's what they do. That doesn't really give you the same sort of control over how people perceive your product specifically, but it's also, like, a huge investment in that business and how, like, our faith in their ability to, like, just do things well in general.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a...
Do you guys do custom blends for these restaurants?
Not we really. We don't know. No. Yeah,
yeah, that's kind of a unique thing too. Like a lot of most companies have some sort of way to accommodate that.
Yeah,
we've got a pretty tight product line. We just kind of stick to the product line.
So, like, what's some of the favorite coffees and that you guys work with and provide, and what's the flavor profiles?
You know, we have been buying a tremendous amount of coffee over the last couple of years from a cooperative in Yirgacheffe, Ethiopia, called the Yirgacheffe Coffee Farmers Cooperative Union, and it's a big co-op. They have a number of different kind of washing stations, which are the processing facilities where coffee gets processed from a cherry down to a green coffee bean, and we buy coffee from a number of those different washing stations. But the relationship is really great for us because it provides us, number one, we can buy like a lot of coffee from them. The coffee that we get from them is of a really, really high quality, meaning that it is, you know, unique in flavor. It is well prepared, so it lasts for a long time. It doesn't tend to fade as quickly as coffees that are processed less well might tend to fade. And coffees from, you know, Ethiopia is the birthplace of coffee. So the genetic diversity in coffee in Ethiopia, it surpasses any other place where coffee grows. And so the flavors that you get from coffees from Ethiopia are super, super unique. And as we, when we think about like our menu, being able to offer a bunch of different examples of coffee from that part of the world creates, you know, real exciting opportunity for us to taste a whole ton of stuff that you can't taste in less genetically diverse coffee growing regions.
That's awesome.
And buying coffee like that too, I mean, there's a lot of small roasters who buy. You'll start to notice when you start like cross shopping a lot of coffee. A lot of the coffee is the same coffee because they're not really necessarily in a situation where they can buy huge parcels of coffee from an individual or like a one organization. And so you're just sort of like buying them through an intermediary, and that intermediary buys a large amount of coffee, and so lots of people are shopping from the same intermediary. So that makes it hard to distinguish your product from other people's product. And a lot of our buying is actually trying to leverage buying as much as we can from a person so that that's sort of becomes a coffee that's synonymous with us. You know what
like
I mean?
A signature which is awesome. Coffee for us in a way. Yeah.
If we can end on a poetic note.
Ooh.
Dramatic pause. Take a second each. Why do you each love coffee? Whenever you're ready.
Gotta think about that one. It's a thinker. I love coffee. And I first got into coffee, and the reason why I still love it is the combination of like, I love food and beverage broadly, and coffee is an incredibly, incredibly complex beverage. There's just so much going on. And I think the marriage of that, along with the kind of ritual nature of making coffee, those two things are what really, really appeal to me. I've worked in coffee, you know, for about 15 years, and I learned working with counterculture, like, I learn so much from the people that I work with all the time, and that's totally what continues to drive me.
Yeah, I guess I got into coffee because of the social institution more than the agricultural product or the beverage. And, like, I totally am a person who enjoys drinking things. But coffee is cool and weird because it's one of the only beverages that people drink on a super frequent basis that isn't already made. You know what I mean? Like, it's been made partially, like, roasted for you, and then you have to, like, make it yourself. And in the making it yourself, you become really aware really quickly about how much you need to really focus on making it. I don't know, like, the more or less attention you pay to making it, it becomes a wildly different product. So you become, like, way more engaged than most other things that you consume on a super regular basis. So that, I guess. That's me.
All right, well, Jesse and Tommy, thank you so much. Where can people go to find about counterculture coffee?
You should definitely come to our training center on Broome Street between Mott and Mulberry. And every Friday at 10 a.m., we open the doors to the public, and you come taste coffee with us.
Do a little cupping.
Do a little cupping. Sometimes we brew coffee. We hang out. We nerd out. It's a good time.
What's the soundtrack there?
Oh, man. We did a bunch of Hall & Oates last week, which was pretty awesome. I put some Steely Dan on pretty much whenever I control the stereo.
Yeah.
I
feel like Run the Jewels was playing a lot.
Run the Jewels.
Wow. You really just went to two very opposite ends of the spectrum.
Well, we are
the coffee shop.
We get it.
Coffee is diverse.
Coffee is diverse.
Totally.
And Instagram, social media, anything like that?
Yeah, at counterculture, counter_culture.
Uh-huh. Or on Instagram at counterculture coffee.
Awesome.
Great.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming
by. Thank you guys so much.
Come drink coffee with us.
Yeah. We will.
Friday's at 10.
Yeah, Friday's at 10. So this up-and-coming rapper named Drake put out an album by surprise. a few days ago. So I feel like we'd be remiss not to play a song off it.
And we have Oland coming up live in just a few minutes.
Yeah, this is Preach by Drac. Am I saying that right?
Get out of here.
All right, here we go. Snacky Tunes.
Cassidy, my name is Party, not participation. Sorry for the miscommunication. I need a drink and some tequila with you. You know what I'm trying to do. Hey, let's pop the E off a lip. I got some time in the blow. I've got the money to blow. I've got the money in blow. Don't have to guess how I know. Oh, it's a secret. Trust me. I'll keep it. Your own niggas boring as bones. You put that body tape on. You know what's going on. You know what's going on. She keep it wet like tsunami. She thinks she saw the Titanic. I get a high like wasabi. She think it's Willie and Oz. I think I'm a pop one for you. Drink one. Fuck you, young nigga, preach. Preach, 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 preach. Young nigga, preach. Preach, 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 preach. Young nigga, preach, 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 preach. Still in Miami. Most of these girls are too messy. I gotta do some reflecting. I gotta find me one out here that's good at taking direction. I am convinced that my calls are being recorded, so hit my assistant to get me the message and make the connection like brrr. I'm on that way tonight. I hope you're not the crazy type, yeah. I'm in your state tonight. I might just break the bank tonight, yeah. P&D ain't with the Ray Tay, you know J-Ray. Got girls here going way, 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 way. Saga City trip to payday. Glowed up off a gateway, man, you can't afford me. Doing this one thing, doing it right is a whole different story. Niggas is all in their feelings these days, all in their feelings these days. But hearing the scripture with that many sixes, you should be afraid.
Young nigga, preach.
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 Oh man, Drake, Drizzy Dre. I think this might be the rap album that uses the word six more than any other album of all time.
Interesting.
Yeah, we can talk more about it. But right now we have Oland in the studio jamming on some pizza. How'd you like that pizza?
Oh, I love the pizzas here. It's my favorite pizza.
I could hang out here and eat pizza and drink beer all day.
Yeah, me too. Bee sting. That's my favorite. I'm so bummed. It's off the menu. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You can't make a special request?
Yeah, I do that every time I'm here.
Yeah.
I always ask for that, and they always make it, so it's nice.
You're like, come on.
It's that secret. The other, is that what they mean by the other menu?
Yeah. It's like the In-N-Out secret menu at Roberta's. Yeah. You just got to know the pizza by name.
Yeah.
You just have like a running list of all their past classics.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ is also a good one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That is really good.
So welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So this radio show is obviously a family affair, as you can tell. Just a couple of brothers.
Who?
You and me.
Oh! Oh, us.
And I was reading and I saw that you recorded some of your last record with your family.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It's, to me, like, some people can't really get along very well with their family, but to me, like, it's, they inspire me because they know me very well and, obviously, they want me to be happy and they want me to make the right decisions for myself. So they're just like, they actually know about music. My mom's an opera singer. My dad's an organist. And I've, you know, I've sung and played with them since I was little, so I guess it's pretty natural for me to work with them.
Did you have a family band?
No, we did. Yeah, actually we did, but I wasn't part of it.
Oh.
Yeah, I wasn't good enough.
Wow.
Like at every family gatherings, they would... basically, they all are classical musicians. So it would be like a string quartet and like different kinds of flutes and stuff. And they would like form this orchestral band. And sometimes I was allowed to sing a little bit like background stuff, but or like play the recorder, but it wasn't really.
Wow. Then you're like, I'll show you.
Yeah.
Well, let me, you're a band. Yeah. Wait a second. What was the, and do they let you play now? Or like, what was the process of making it into the family band?
Well, it's funny
first
because...
First off, do you want a tish box of tissues? Do you want to hug about this? This could be painful memories.
It's totally cool. But actually, like when I was a kid, I felt very different in my family because I wasn't that interested in Bach and Beethoven when I was small. Like those were like the rock stars in our family. And when I was a kid, I could hear those classical composers and I could tell the difference immediately what kind of composer it was. I can't do that anymore at all, but I could when I was a kid.
They lost that edge.
Yeah.
That classical
yeah.
edge.
Oh, that harpsichord riff? Straight Bach, right there. He's just shredding up and down that.
But when I got into like school, I found out that was like so not very cool to know like which year that Mozart stuff was composed.
Unless it was the Rock Me Amadeus remix, then yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess I just started dancing instead. And I was a dancer for 10 years and didn't want to become a musician. Like, actually just really tried to avoid everything music. And then it wasn't until I got an injury from dance that I kind of had to, you know, like music was calling for me. Had to explore it.
So what was it? So, like, to come full circle, like, how did you approach your family, like, recording with you? Or did you ask them or...
I asked them.
Yeah.
And it was really fun because I would be scared. Like, I would be so scared if they ever asked me to participate in any of their stuff, because then it's that whole like classical, you know, certain ways you have to like look when you play and like sit and stuff. And that would scare me. But like when I invite them into my world, it's my rules and I can just relax and do music the way I think it should sound. And
well, why don't we hear a song?
Yeah. Sure.
By your rules.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first song you're going to play for us?
I'm going to play White Nights.
Okay, oh, great. Awesome.
Cool.
till the dawn. There is no silence. I will keep following the sirens. There is no silence. I will keep following the sirens.
Awesome.
It's great.
Awesome. Can you, I mean, I totally freaked out when I came in and saw that you had a little bit custom, is it a synth, a modulator? What do you want to call that?
I would want to call it, it's like a sequencer. It's like a, you can do, pretty much it's like Lego, but with music. So you can build, oh, I think I'm still playing something right now.
Just for a live demo. There you
okay,
go. There
got
it is.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little Lego bits, but with music. So you can build like a synthesizer if you want, or you can build like a drum beat. And like, I've just like assembled it in a way where I have like a percussion part and like a drum kit. And I can like, you know, just like turn and do little twist and turn.
It's so
like
awesome. Little Bits is like one of the coolest companies
it's
ever.
So freaking cool.
Yeah,
it's one of my really good friends who like works with them, so
yeah.
Like every time something is like I want something to be slightly different, I'm like, oh, you should do this little circuit so we can do that kind of sound.
Yeah,
and
hey,
he will, like 3 days later he will come by with something weird.
He's like, hey, if you wanted to put that into the kit, that would be totally rad.
Yeah.
So you're official research and developer for Little Bits.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. So I know that you're Danish.
Yeah.
And have any
That's of, very good. That's more than most people know. Everyone be like, are you Swedish?
Well,
you're Dutch.
We spent a lot of time in Copenhagen.
And Stockholm,
oh,
so we know the difference.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
I love Copenhagen.
Good boys.
Yes.
Copenhagen, I think, is one of the most beautiful, fantastic,
wonderful.
It's fun, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The Christiana bikes and Christiana itself.
Uh-huh.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Ooh.
We actually had a good meal on Christiana. Someone like made us like an open air like leg of lamb.
Yeah, I hung out with these like Christiana gypsies who cooked us like this roasted leg of lamb.
They were like the kids of the parent, like the kids of the people that moved in the 70s.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a pretty funny place.
And tons of Jaeger bombs, which was not.
Oh
yeah. But I was curious if any of the culinary traditions from your family have like followed you over to wee Brooklyn,
like how I got over here. Or?
No, just like, do you cook? Do you like?
Oh, do I cook?
Yeah.
I love cooking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually really into it. When I'm, I tour, yeah, I think it's the same problem for all musicians. You like, you eat out all the time. And once you get home, you just really, for me at least, I really love just spending hours and hours in the kitchen. Like,
what's the first thing you cook when you get home?
Danish sourdough bread.
Okay.
It's something that is like one of those things I have to have in my fridge.
Yeah.
I eat it every single day. And it's like a sourdough that has like been passed through generations in my family.
So do you have like a starter yeast?
Yeah, like the same starter that all my family is using.
You wait a second, did you take it with you?
Yeah, I flew it over the Atlantic.
Oh, wow. Yeah. How many generations back is it?
I think a few, and it has never been broken.
Can we have
you can totally have some starter.
Okay. It's well, like, I'll maybe skip the starter and just a loaf.
Yeah, we'll take a loaf.
Oh, yeah, you're and these days I'm into weird stuff like brewing kombucha. It looks like I have like
you got your mother,
brains in formaldehyde going? In my kitchen.
Yeah. I mean, that's good stuff. It's stinky stuff, but it's good stuff.
It doesn't smell so much. It just looks really odd.
Yeah.
But I like doing soups. Like I like doing like oxtail soups and stuff
like
that.
Oh, oxtail's great. Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a better time of year to do like oxtail soup.
No, right now, right?
Oh my God. Just like that nice thick piece of bread.
Uh-huh.
Just curl into that.
Sourdough bread.
And what is the, before you go on tour, what's like the last thing that you make for yourself before you know like you're heading out for a few months?
The last thing I make for myself, that is probably something that has like been cooking for a very long time, like a stew or like a gumbo. I like things that
classic
like
classic Danish gumbo, right?
Exactly.
From the motherland.
I learned the recipe for gumbo by Dave Siddek. And like because we used to cook it when we were making an album together.
You know, there's this really great gumbo place in Aarhus that's where
in Aarhus?
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
I don't believe it. Look, it's on a back street. I'll show you one day.
Okay.
Why don't we hear another song?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
What do you want to play for us?
I want to play Nothing Is Over.
Okay, great.
From a new album.
Okay, great. I'm telling you, Greg. Fly to Copenhagen. Three-hour train.
Get the gumbo.
Get the gumbo.
Yeah.
There's also a great place for hot chicken in Aarhus as well.
Yeah. Fried chicken. Perfect.
Yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Oland, again, live on Snacky Tunes.
In my head, in my heart, I've not packed and moved on. Now you're here, now you're gone. Turn the lights off and on. And we're so scared to choose. Will we win? Will we lose? 'Cause love still lives here. In your eyes, in your face, it's like nothing has changed. And I want to believe that it isn't too late. On my skin when we touch, I can still feel the rush. 'Cause love still is here. Could we go just a little bit longer? I don't know if it's right or wrong, but just for now, nothing is over. Could we try just a little bit harder? We'll burn just a little bit brighter. Tell me now, nothing is over. Nothing is over. Turn the clock, let's go back. Clear what was, start from scratch. And you'll walk up to me, I'll be wearing that dress. When you'll ask me to stay, swear I won't run away. 'Cause love begins here. Could we go just a little bit longer? I don't know if it's right or wrong, but just for now, nothing is over. Could we try just a little bit harder? We'll burn just a little bit brighter. Tell me now, nothing is over. Nothing is over. Now can't you see? It's high. Clear it all away.
just a little bit harder. Just for now, nothing is over. Nothing is over.
Right? That was a dog, right? Is that your dog?
Yeah, that's my dog, Uyen.
Oh, shout out.
Songwriting credits, like a couple points on the back end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like Blue Ivy, right? You know?
When the exactly. Beyonce's?
Yeah.
Dog?
Yeah.
No. Well, when we were recording that song, me and Tora, who plays keys right now, we were producing the album together. And my dog just kept like growling and barking when I was doing the vocals for this song, because like I was doing a beat with a knife that he wanted to chew on. So like in the end, it was just like, okay, Uyen, you got to be on the album.
Well, that's that Danish saying: never get between a dog and his knife.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, I thought that was Swedish.
Yeah, it could be Swedish. I'm sorry. I may have misspoke. Wait, what is that modulator that you're playing?
The one that Tor is playing?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a Carretta Guitari.
Can you hear Tor?
Yeah.
Can we get some to the?
No. It's all right.
He plays like a Carretta Guitari, which is a super cool like synth company actually based in Brooklyn. And then he has like this crazy MS-20 Korg thing that he has built to like a see-through setup.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like everything is like custom built. We are a little bit geeky in that way.
No, it's great.
A lot bit awesome in that way.
Really amazing.
A lot bit awesome. So what's coming up? What you got? What's in the mix for you?
I'm going to tour in the U.S. Probably from like around late March. Then going on the road for a couple of weeks, maybe 6 weeks or something.
Nice.
And then now I'm just doing a bunch of promo for my album, Er Sick.
I need some remixes coming out with some like old snacky tunes. Lauren Flax is on there. CSS.
Yeah.
Lauren
Flax, Mrs. and Mr.
Can we say how awesome Lauren Flax is?
Isn't she the best?
She's
the best.
Yeah.
Ray of Sunshine.
Totally.
Ray of Sunshine on a cold December day.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that convinced me to get hand tattoos.
We can talk about that. We can talk about that.
She has the best tattoos.
Yeah, she does.
They're just incredible.
So you got the album, the tour.
Mm-hmm.
The sourdough bread.
Sourdough bread.
It sounds like everything's coming up Oland.
Yeah.
Where do you take the yeast on the road with you and like find time to, if you can find a kitchen, bake a loaf?
No. Okay. I would definitely not do that because the sourdough, it will grow. Like, and it will like grow all over your bags if you like keep it alive for too long.
We got a writer for an oven.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
Actually, I know musicians who have that. Tricky, he has like a rider for a little kitchen and knife and stuff when he, like, because he wants to like chop stuff up.
Well, that knife is for his dog.
I wonder if you could like send like airdrop packages along the way with the yeast in like a frozen container.
Greg,
I'm just thinking about it.
Well, it's very good to think about those things. I will take it into account.
The future of drones. Oland starter yeast.
Yeah. Drone drop.
Drone drop East. All right. Well, we want to make sure that we have time for one song, but where can people get the album? Where can people follow you online?
They can follow me on Instagram, I guess. Oland Music.
What's your Instagram game like? Photos of your dog?
I'm pretty fun.
Okay.
lots of animal pictures, lots of stupid things in pastel colors. I love pastel colors.
Love it.
And just like what we do with our instruments and... Yeah,
the instruments. I posted a photo up about the little bit sequencer because it's so cool. That might be the coolest piece of equipment.
I post most of the stuff we do so that people can like figure out where we play and stuff.
Awesome. And when's the next time you're playing in New York?
Next time is... Tonight we're playing a show at just for Fashion Week. It's I think it's a Gansevoort World Hotel. But like, other than that, we play a lot these days. But yeah, I can't remember. I'm really bad promo person for myself.
I think it's like early April at Bowery.
Yeah.
Well done, sir.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You're like on it.
Some would say April 6th. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Look at this guy.
Okay, I'm going to go with that.
Yeah.
Professional. All right, so what's the last song you're going to play for us?
Yeah, we're going to play Head Up High.
Oh, great. All right. Well, thank you to Counterculture Coffee. Thank you, Olan. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Robertas. Thank you, Heritage. Shout out to Mom.
Shout out to SNL 40. Very excited.
Oh, yeah. SNL 40. We were raising that stuff. Lauren, we love you. Keep it real. Keep it funny. Olan, one last time here live on Snacky Tunes.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.